Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. Hope everybody had a great weekend. We are back for a whole swing of shows this week, starting on this Monday, where we will be talking about where this Bucs defense ranks in the NFL. Are they top 10? Are they top 5? Are they even in the top 20? We're going to go through each position, talk about the Bucs and how they stack up with the rest of the league. So very excited to be chatting with everybody today. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me back from vacation, live and in person, it is SR, Scott Reynolds. Scott, welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Pewter people. Had a great time in Colorado. Was out of Denver. I was out at Morrison. Saw Dermot Kennedy at Red Rocks. It's a fantastic venue. If you want to see a live show, you've got to go to Red Rocks. It's a fantastic natural environment out there. About 9,000, 10,000 fans. It was cool. When I mean cool, it was chilly, Matt. It was like down to the 40s at night. Certainly a climate change from the hot, humid conditions we're experiencing now here in Tampa and the hot, humid conditions that the Buccaneer players will be experiencing tomorrow at OTAs when we'll be live. They're covering the practice. It'll be the first open practice that we'll have an opportunity to see, and we'll see Baker Mayfield throw the ball to crazy characters like Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and we'll see Kyle Trask as well. So it should be a good old time. We'll see some new Buccaneer players, guys like Greg Gaines, the defensive tackle, Ryan Neal, the new safety, suiting up in Buccaneer uniforms for the first time. So looking forward to that. And a quick little plug here. We've got a lot of exciting Bucs programming on deck for you. We talked about the Bucs offensive line. We'll have a first look at that in tomorrow's OTA analysis show right here at 4 o'clock on Pewter Report TV. Make sure that you are tuned in to that. We're going to be looking hard at not just new faces like Matt Filer at left guard and Cody Mauch at right guard, but also Tristan Wirfs, what he looks like as a left tackle and what Luke Getteke looks like as a right tackle. And if that's not that's not enough for you, well, we have another show on Wednesday. And Wednesday, we're going to take a look at the Bucs' most intriguing second-year player. Is it Logan Hall? Is it Rashad White? Cade Otton? Well, let's take a look at the second-year players. Who's primed for a breakout? Who's primed for more plays and playing time?
Who do the Bucs need more out of, too?
That's right.
Even Ty McCollum, I think, probably not number one. I'm not spoiling anything there. But Ty McCollum, there's a lot to look at for his second season, where he fits on the defense.
Yeah, no doubt. And the Buccaneers have struggled to keep their cornerbacks healthy. So we've seen Zion McCollum in a starting role last year as a rookie on a couple of occasions. And he may be pressed into duty again if an injury happens to Jamel Dean or Carlton Davis. And then Thursday's show, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, special guest, Bucs right guard Cody Mauch. So that'll be fun. We'll have the rookie here on the show in prime time, so make sure that you bring your questions for that particular episode. He'll answer some of those questions for you guys, and we'll have some questions for him as well. So 4 p.m. tomorrow with the Bucs OTA analysis, we'll get the first look at the offensive line for the Bucs, and then on Wednesday show at 7 p.m. Eastern, the most intriguing second-year player for the Bucs, and then Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern time, special guest Bucs right guard Cody Mauch.
Yeah, very, very fun week of episodes coming up. It's obviously always exciting when we get a player on the show, especially someone as intriguing as Cody Mauch. I mean, we already talked to him a couple times at press conferences, and he's been great. He's a huge Motley Crue fan, so we'll find out what his favorite Motley Crue song is. I know, Scott, you're a big fan as well. I'm also a big fan of Super Chats, and we got to give a huge shout-out to Adam Hamilton.
That's a way to start a Monday, Matt, right there.
There we go, Adam. There we go, Adam.
Wow.
Thank you so much for the $49.99 Super Chat. And this does go with our topic today, just talking about the defense in general. But Adam says, really enjoyed your letter to Devin, SR. Yeah, Scott wrote a great article, a letter to Devin White, how he can kind of get back into the good graces of Bucs fans. Definitely check it out on PewterReport.com. Adam says he completely agrees with what Scott had to say, and then asked, any rumblings on what he's going to do, parentheses, hold out or play? Also, what effect do you think this has on the team? Dude is supposed to be one of the leaders. Get the business, but come on now. Go Bucs. Yeah, I think really great question, Adam, and thank you for the comment as well. And the super chat. I do think Devin is going to play. Funny enough, about 15 minutes ago, he tweeted out, and he's been pretty active on social media lately, whether it's the, posing a love letter to Levante David, which is awesome because we all love Levante David. Just want to pull up Devin's tweet, but he was saying,
You're going to have to do that, Matt, because he's blocked the Devin Peter
blocked,
account.
Devin has blocked PeterReport.com, our Twitter account. But anyway, he says, this was 43 minutes ago. He said, ready to play some football. That basketball stuff I'm watching, boring, with a football. If you're a fan of the NBA, the Eastern Western Conference Finals have not been great. Both teams are up 3-0, the Nuggets on the Lakers and the Heat on the Celtics. But yeah, maybe that's a sign that Devin is going to be returning sooner rather than later.
I hope so.
I don't expect to see him at OTAs tomorrow. Maybe mandatory minicamp, though, because I just kind of wish Devin would stop with like the cryptic tweets and going on the Eagles social media and doing all this stuff. Just kind of like show up. Let's wipe the slate clean. Now, will it like distract some of the players and things like that? We've talked about it before, and I'm kind of the belief the Bucks have been through way crazier things and way more, team distracting situations, whether it's Antonio Brown, whether it was Tom Brady not being there for training camp. I think players understand that this is just the business side of things. So like a player holding out because of a contract dispute is, we've seen it a million times. We will continue to see it for a million times. I think the players know it's a business. Devin's obviously a leader on this team, whether he has the C or not. He obviously vibes pretty well with a lot of guys in the locker room. So I don't really foresee it being a distraction unless Devin takes to social media and starts airing out some grievances via the Twitter machine. So overall, I don't think it'll be too much of an issue unless he just plays poor and has bad body language. Overall, I don't see it being an issue unless his play doesn't live up to his talk.
I don't think this affects him or the team at all in terms of, you know, his status among players and even the coaches. This is voluntary, right? It clearly states that in the collective bargaining agreement. The OTAs are voluntary. This is a player that has been a four-year starter in Todd Bowles' defense.
Yeah,
I don't think that Todd Bowles or Larry Foote, the co-defensive coordinator, the inside linebackers coach, they're not wringing their hands over Devin missing some of these things. We asked Larry Foote at his last press conference if he's keeping Devin abreast of the new wrinkles, blitzes, you know, coverages, the new things they're installing. He says, we're sending him that information for him to look at. So I don't think there's going to be an issue there. But really, you know, I'm just telling you, Matt, I've talked to multiple team sources and they have spoken so highly of Servacié Denis. And even Jeremy Banks, the undrafted free agent out of Tennessee, they really feel like these guys, and usually the people I talk to, they don't talk out of turn. It's like, well, we're going to wait and see when the pads come on, et cetera.
Yeah.
But they're picking up some things cerebrally inside the meeting rooms, translating that out into the field for the rookie minicamp, to the point where they feel like they've got some real – day three gems here. And of course, Jeremy Banks was an undrafted free agent. But I really think that one of those guys, either Banks or Denis, can emerge as a starter next year, possibly replacing Levante David. I'm not saying Levante is not going to be here in 2024, but he will turn 33 next year.
Yeah.
And so at some point in time, Levante David is no longer going to be a Buccaneer, right? That happens. And it usually happens to guys in their 30s. If you're, you know, a unicorn like Tom Brady, then you last to 45, Matt. But to me, they really like these guys. I've heard more pre-training camp buzz on them than I've heard about KJ Britt, right? Or Grant Stewart. Obviously, he was more of a special teams guy. But they really like these linebackers. And so it would behoove Devin White to get there, show up, and maintain his status as a starter. We've seen Todd Bowles start Carlton Davis as a rookie, right? Well, I should not Carlton because he was 2018 draft class, but start Jamel Dean as a rookie. Start Sean Murphy Bunting as a rookie. Give Mike Edwards some playing time as a rookie in 2019. And, of course, start Antoine Winfield Jr. at safety in 2020, Matt. He's not afraid to start rookies. And if he has to do that at middle linebacker, you can always put the green dot on Levante's helmet, have him call the plays, you know, and roll that way.
Yeah, the draft hurt Devin even a little bit more. Not that Devin had a lot of leverage in the first place, but he lost another bargaining chip when the Bucks drafted Servasio Dennis and signed a couple of these undrafted free agents like Banks that you were just talking about. Because Devin can at least say before that, and thank you to Bucks Basement for the $5 super chat. I'll get to that in 1 second. Devin could at least say before that, well, you got me and Levante, and that's about it, with all due respect to KJ Britt. You guys need me as much as I need you to pay me what I think is the right amount. Now with Servasio Dennis, and yeah, maybe it's a bit of a stretch already, fifth round pick, he's going to be the guy. But as you say, if the Bucks brass is very high on Servasio Dennis, I know I am myself, and just the discipline that he's going to bring in, the Bucks have another outlet. They have another route that they can go to, which they didn't previously when all of these contract negotiations and disappointments started out. Now Servasio Dennis is another pawn on the, maybe not a pawn, but he's another piece on the chessboard into this whole saga, if you will. So yeah, Devin, the sooner he can get there, the more it will help himself more than actually the Buccaneers, because we know what he wants. Even if it's not with the Bucs next season, he's still got to play for a big contract. He's got to prove to 31 other teams.
We're going to get back to that super chat in 1 second, but this is very topical just to kind of put a period on this here. Cali Buck says, please, Scott, you know Bowles is starting anyone over his favorite Devin White. That's true. But my point is, if Devin White decides to hold out, right, if he decides not to show up and play football, Todd Bowles is not going to have any hesitancy about putting Servasio Dennis or Jeremy Banks, whichever one of those guys emerges as the better guy, in there at the middle linebacker spot. Give the green dot to Levante David on his helmet so he can call the plays. That's all I'm saying. If Devin White's there, he's going to be the starter. He's got four years. This will be his fifth year. And you know, if he shows up and he's, you know, extended the peace agreements to Todd Bowles, Jason Light, and says, hey, listen, okay, you didn't trade me, I'm here to work, let's get on with this fifth year option and let's play some football, then the team knows it's in Devin White's best interest to play really good football this year for them and for himself.
I do wonder, Scott, when mandatory minicamp gets here or even in training camp, what type of attitude, if Devin shows up, what type of attitude is he bringing, though? Is he going to go Marshawn Lynch, just kind of be like, I'm just here so I don't get fined? Or is he going to buy in and be like, I'm ready for a new season, let's right the wrongs of last year, I'm moving, you know, water under the bridge, I'm moving forward? I'm very curious what type of attitude.
Him too.
He could come in and be like, yeah, I'm still going to sulk, I'm still not happy here, but I have to be here if I want to get that next contract. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see. And Bucks Basement, thanks again for the super chat, says, I don't blame people for not taking the Bucks serious. Many, many question marks on the entire team, particularly in the trenches, and a clown head coach. That's the last thing I want to say. Were you curious, Scott, when Todd Bowles got asked last week about Devin White, is he going to show up? And he said that he hasn't spoken to Devin at all. Now, he said that, obviously, like, Larry Foote's been talking to Devin White, and he's been talking to Larry Foote about that. But just in the past, how both Devin and Todd have spoken about each other, did you find it curious at all that he didn't speak to Devin in any capacity?
Yeah, a little bit, but I'll say this. You know, Todd Bowles, and I kind of wrote about this in the Devin White, the open letter to Devin White. You know, and I told Devin, I'm like, you know, you've got to do your homework. You got to study your opponents, right? And your opponents in this situation are Todd Bowles and Jason Light. They're the decision makers for this football team, the head coach and the general manager. Jason's going to determine how much Devin is going to get paid or not paid. Yeah. And Todd's going to say, I want him on the team or I don't, right? So those are the two primary principles in this decision-making process for the Bucks. So Devin really can't do much communicating with Todd right now because he's kind of the enemy in the contract dispute realm of things. And I think that's fine with Todd. He's fine going through Larry Foote. Foote can be that, hey, listen, I have nothing to do with how much money you're going to make. I don't do anything with contracts. I'm just the messenger. I'm just here to get you prepared for the season if and when you decide to show up, right? And that's the role. And I think Todd knows that. So I don't think he's taking it personally or anything to that nature. But the thing with Devin White is, you know, he skipped, and I've used this Christmas story analogy before. He skipped the double dog dare and went right for the triple dog dare and opting to go with the trade request rather than just, hey, I'm going to hold out. I'm not going to be here at camp because I want a new contract, et cetera. I mean, this goes right to DEFCON 5, right? Yeah. It's I want out because you're not going to pay me what I want. And it's a generational thing too, man. It's like, I'm 51 years old. Todd is going to be 60 this year. Jason, I think, is 52. You know, back in our day, we had TV dinners, Matt, and they were Swanson, and you had to peel off the foil and stick them in the oven, and you had your instant meal in 45 minutes when it cooked. I mean, that's just how it was, right? There's so much in this generation of instant gratification. I want it now, on demand, you know, just everything like that. And he's got to be patient. Jason and Todd are older from a different generation. They want to see you become the player that you think you are right now, and pay you accordingly if you get there. But the patience part has got to be there. Todd and Jason are being very patient in this process. Devin is not, and he's not going to get it anywhere asking for a trade because they're simply not going to do it. Now the interesting thing, Matt, is if Servassier Dennis really shows up and proves to be the day three steal that the Bucks believe he could be, do they trade Devin White during the season as Roquan Smith was traded? I mean, Smith was a holdout, but I'm just saying this wouldn't necessarily preclude the team if they realize, based upon Devin's contract demands or his attitude or whatever, if they just simply don't want him back, right? Chances are they probably get a third round draft pick in the year coming up. Mm-hmm. For him, from a compensatory pick standpoint, given the probable size of his contract elsewhere. But could they get more for him by just trading him outright rather than waiting for a compensatory pick, which will be at the end of the third round?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of factors into that as well. Specifically, how do the Bucks look with their, you know, through the season? Like, are they competitive? Are they lobbying for that NFC South title? Or... Yeah. Do they just come out and they struggle and they have three or four wins on the season? You just talked about patience. And I think whether the Bucks are playing well or not, they could take advantage of other teams' impatience. Because the more the season goes on, there are going to be teams, I feel like, we're going to – kind of like the Rams a couple seasons ago. They're going to go all in, picks be damned, whatever. If they feel they're one piece away and Devin White could be that guy – yeah. Teams might get desperate and be like, you know what, he's probably worth a third, but we'll give you a second round pick just because we want him right now.
Right.
Or an unfortunate part of the game is injuries. There could be, you know, ironically, the Eagles. Like, if one of their linebackers goes down, they're like, hey, we just made the Super Bowl last year. We're going to contend again this season. We don't want to make this season a waste because our starting inside linebacker got injured. Let's go after Devin White. He already likes us anyway. That's a hypothetical I'm just using, but, you know.
Exactly.
It definitely could play out that way without question.
It could.
A lot of this hinges on Servassier Dennis as well.
Yeah, it does.
But it's a business for a reason. And if the Bucks feel like they can get better value and not have to pay Devin White, it's absolutely something you have to consider whether they're winning or struggling.
Right. Yep. Well, I just got back from Denver, Colorado, and ironically, it's 4:20. And that means it's time for roll call. What time is it, Matt? I did that wrong.
No, you did it right. We do it at 4:20.
I said roll call. That's not the way we say it.
You're right. It's roll call, baby.
Where are you
at, Peter people? We have awesome fans, not just in Tampa, not just in Colorado, but international, both U.S. and international. We have great fans that watch from all over the globe at many different times as well, and we appreciate all of you guys. So, this is just something, if you're new to the show, we like to do have fun on Mondays. Everybody can start putting in the chat where they are watching the show from, and we will put it up on the screen as we continue to talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their defense for this show. Scott, I don't know if you're feeling anything. I'm happy to talk about the Bucs and where they rank as well.
Yeah, let's go for a rant. Let's kind of start the show a little bit here. We'll kind of break it down by positions here, but Matt, I'm going to be putting up the locations from where people are listening and watching from. And if you want to take a minute or two to chime in on a topic of your choice, go for it.
Yeah, let's do it up. So we're talking about how good this Bucs defense can be. And we'll talk about individual players, what our expectations are. But, you know, I was reading an article today on the Sports Knot, and it ranked the defenses going into this year. They have the Bucs 19th on this list. And I don't know. I definitely don't agree with 19. I think they're a much, much better team than 19. And, you know, I try not to be one of those guys that just watches the stats. What does Christopher say? In the parking lot of the demolished Mecca South Hall in Overland Park. Christopher, always a consistent watcher of the show. So appreciate you, Christopher.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think the Bucks are in the top five by any means. I mean, just off the top of my head and reading lists and stuff like that, you know, the Eagles got to be up there at the top. The San Francisco 49ers, absolutely. Yeah. Cowboys led the league in turnovers this year. The Eagles led the league in sacks. But I think the Bucs are way better than 19. I think the Jets are in the top five as well. Miami, it's tough to gauge because last year they weren't that great, but they just traded for Jalen Ramsey. So now they arguably have the best cornerback in the league with the pretty good pass rush. You know, I think like the Steelers and the Ravens are probably in that top 10 area. But the Bucs, and I understand why people doubt them a lot this year, but I would put the Bucs in like that 10 to 15 category, in my opinion. For all the faults that we've said about them with struggling to get after the quarterback, they had 45 sacks on the year, and the Eagles just went out of their mind with 70.
70. That was just crazy.
The Bucs were ninth overall. It's not like the Bucs struggled terribly. They were also ninth in the league in yards allowed per game. The 49ers were first with 300. The Eagles were second with 301. Bucks were at 324. So again, top 10 in yards allowed per game. What really kills the Bucks, of course, and this has kind of been a theme for months now, is just the turnovers. They did not compare well with any of the other top defenses in the league. Bucks only had 20 turnovers last season. That was 24th in the league. So very much at the bottom of the list there. And, Cowboys led that with 33. So a big drop off. But I think with this team, they can move well within the top 10. I would say maybe at like 6 or 7. Yeah. It's very, very contingent on the secondary creating more turnovers with interceptions.
Right.
What the pass rush is going to look like. Like, does Todd Bowles have to blitz because he wants to or he needs to? I think that's a big caveat in all
totally
this.
Totally agree.
And the development of a lot of the second-year guys, which we'll talk about later on this week, what they get from Kalijah Kancey. And, of course, the whole Devin White situation, which we just talked about. So, right now, I put the Bucks in the top 15 with a big opportunity if they play to their potential or even – you know, better than expected, could be within, I would say, the top 7.
Yeah, I think that's kind of spot on. We're going to get to the actual defensive rankings of last year and kind of did they increase or decrease from the previous year, which, of course, was that 13-4 season in 2021. But, you know, I appreciate everybody with the super chats. We had one from Brazil, Bahamas, of course, plenty from the great old US of A. And one in particular, Matt, not necessarily from your old neck of the woods, but from Queens, New York.
Yeah.
And he was at this is Sean. He was at a bodega.
Let's go. Morning,
and he had a Celsius, which reminds me of one thing, which is Celsius, the official energy drink of Pewter Report. It's our number one pick. It should be your number one pick every morning. I had a Celsius this morning. I actually had the one of the brand new flavors. It was that green apple cherry. And it's a fantastic flavor. It's admittedly not in my top 10, but I had some on hand and, you know, it was refreshing. I loved it. It's definitely in my top 12. It's probably 11 or 12. There's just so many flavors, Matt. It's hard to choose the number one or the number five or the number 10. But regardless, you need to make Celsius your number one pick when it comes to energy drinks because they give you the essential energy you need, plus all of the energy without the sugar crash later on. Why? Because there's no sugar. It's that simple. All the energy, no sugar crash because there's no sugar. Oasis vibe, boy. This threesome right here, this sparkling orange, that's my number one. Oasis vibe is in my number two. The lemon lime is a fantastic flavor for the afternoon. And when Ashley and I went out there to Colorado, you know what the first thing we did was? We went on Celsius.com. We clicked on the store locator, and we found in Denver where we could buy some Celsius. And we went to the Airbnb and loaded up. So we had some Celsius for the morning. And if we needed an extra pick-me-up in the afternoon, we had some of those. So it was a great time out there in Denver with Celsius. And you can do the same thing. Go to Celsius.com, click on the store locator, and find out where you can get any of the amazing flavors of Celsius, whether it's at a local convenience store, a health and fitness store, a grocery store, or a
Bodega.
Bodega. So make sure that you're drinking Celsius, the official energy drink of Pewter Report.
Scott, I would like to start off, if you're okay with it, with the Bucks' defensive line, because I think, for me, that is my biggest concern. The overall defensive line, edge rushers as well, obviously. But if this defense wants to be great versus good, I think, you know, Jason Light's all about the trenches. I think it starts and ends with what this defensive line is going to do, because they took a step back in stopping the run. I don't think there's any denying that. I mean, there were several games last year, as you got the rankings on the screen.
Yep.
I mean, just the rush defense, 121 yards per game. I mean, there was multiple times where they allowed like 170 rushing yards in a game, and that is just unheard of for a Todd Bowles-led defense.
It really is.
In this era in Tampa Bay, really Todd Bowles' entire coaching career. But then you stack that on with the fact that the Bucs go through a murderer's row of just great rushing attacks to begin the season. We know what Vita Vea is going to bring, but after that, there's hope about Kalijah Kansi. He's obviously a very exciting player. That's why the Bucs took him when they did it in the first round. But I'm not penciling in Kalijah Kansi to be, you know, out of the gate a great defensive player. I think that's definitely going to take time. Logan Hall, there's a lot of questions. What's he going to do this year? Is it really just he didn't get enough playing time? That's what defensive coach Casey Rogers said. I wish I would have played him more. It's just kind of how the rotation went. There needs to be more accountability than just Vita Vea, and I'm not exactly sure where Tampa Bay is going to get that from. And I think it's the same thing in edge rusher. We talked about it, myself and Josh Capo, on last week's show, where we talked specifically about the Bucs pass rush, and there's a big emphasis on the edge rushers. I don't know what we're going to get from Shaq Barrett, strictly because he's obviously going through a horrible situation right now. And, like, I don't know where his mindset is at. Plus, he's coming back from the Achilles injury. And then, you know, JTS is kind of in the same boat as Logan Hall. It's like, they really need a standout season from him. Are they going to commit to him for longer than that with JTS? And then Anthony Nelson, I just think, is a very serviceable third string outside linebacker. But there's a lot of questions with this defensive line that I think is really going to steer the ship for Tampa Bay's defense. If they want to be a top five team that's shut out, or at least from the end zone, Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, or the team that makes every rookie quarterback or journeyman quarterback turn into an all-pro player. I think it really starts and stops with the guys up front.
I agree. And I think because this year is, you know, the first year without Tom Brady, right? This is post TB, if you will. That Logan Hall was kind of stair-stepped into last year, which is his rookie season. And they had Akeem Hicks and Vita Vea. He wasn't really counted on to be that down-in, down-out starter that he's going to be this year. And they had Will Golston as well, right? So they had three veterans there. I think this year you're going to see Kalijah Kansi. They're going to put him on the field more. There's going to be more of a sense of urgency to get him on the field, get him some experience, accelerate his learning curve, et cetera. I don't think they're going to baby him as much as Logan Hall. And at Logan Hall at 283 pounds last year, it should be different this year at 296 pounds and climbing. He's bigger, stronger. He's doing what the coaches wanted him to do, which was hold up better against the run and those double teams and be a little stronger in terms of taking on guys one-on-one. And I also think that this guy right here, Diaby. I think Diaby is going to factor in as an edge rusher as much or even more so than maybe Anthony Nelson. And I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Shaq Barrett's not back to 100% mentally and physically from the injury and the horrific offseason that he's had, that you're going to see a lot of this guy as well onto the field. This team has got to get more consistent pass rush out of its front four to do what you said, Matt.
Yes.
Allow Todd Bowles to blitz when he wants to rather than when he just has to get pressure. And if you look last year, and we'll kind of just spend a couple of minutes here on this graphic, the total defense last year was a top 10, right? I mean, it was 329.9 yards per game is what they allowed. And believe it or not, folks, that's actually better than it was in 2021, which was their 13-4 season. The Bucs allowed 7 yards more per game. They ranked 15th in the league. So they went from 15th to 10th this past year in terms of total defense. Now, as John Gruden once told me, and wisely so, yards don't win football games, man. Points win them. You know, so it's all about scoring defense. That's really where the emphasis is, because if you can stop teams from scoring, then you can win, right? And the Bucs scoring defense was 21.6 points per game last year, and that ranked 15th. And what I like to look at in terms of scoring defense, Matt, is last year the Bucs defense held teams to 21 points or fewer in 10 games. And in those 10 games, the Bucs were 7-3. They only won 8 games, Matt. So that tells me, you know, in 7 of those games, the defense really did their job. And if they can get that type of performance again, then I really feel like this team can be successful. As I think a lot of people believe that Todd Bowles' defense was worse than it was. It was actually pretty good last year in terms of
efficiency
of yards per game, scoring, et cetera. I really think that I'm pulling up the scoring from the previous year to get a comparison, but I want to say it was on par with the 2021 team as well. But you can see just based on the other graphics there, the pass defense shot up big time, because last year they made big strides. They were ranked 9th in the league, 208.8 yards per game. And that's a big jump from 24th in the league in the previous year, 245 yards. So as Casey Rogers told us, if you're going to have a stifling run defense like the Bucs had in 2021, which was ranked 3rd, 91.6 yards per game, then you're going to have a lower pass defense. And if you improve in the pass defense, you're probably going to have a lower run defense. It's a little bit of a seesaw, Matt. Like, you can't have both ways.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was kind of thinking of. It's like, okay, well, the pass defense improved, but did they actually get better, or did they just improve because the numbers went down because they ran the ball more efficiently? I mean, there were times in 2021, the Cowboys set the tone the first year that they kicked off the season when the game was in Tampa by just saying, we're not going to run the ball at all. And our short passes are going to be our run game. And then other teams kind of copy that for the rest of the season. So yeah, there's a number of different things that you can look at. But when you boil it down, as you said, Scott, it's like, if you score more points than the other team, that's really all that matters at the end of the day. That's all that Todd Bowles cares about. And if they're only allowing 21 points a game, odds are you have a good chance of winning in today's NFL. And the reason why I feel like it just, from the eye test, this defense didn't look as good. But again, you look at the stats and it pairs very well with the 2021 team.
The scoring for the 2021 team, right? That 13-4 Buccaneer team. Now, the scoring was 7th that year. Scoring defense was 7th, not 15th.
Right.
But they averaged allowing 20.9 points per game. So, it wasn't even a point differential. It was less than a point difference between last year and the previous year. So it's still very much on par.
And that's why, you know, football's the ultimate team game. When you go 13-4, sure, it masks a lot of the inefficiencies. When you go 8-9, and sure, you made the playoffs, but you had a losing record. The fact that the Bucs offense wasn't up to snuff, that put the Bucs defense in a lot worse situations throughout the whole season. That kind of gets overlooked if you're just looking at the game versus actually like sitting down and watching it. So an improved offense, I think, is really going to help this Bucs team. And I think the other issue is when the defense struggled last year, it really reared its ugly head. I mean, the first two things that popped into mind are the two losses to the Panthers and the Steelers. I believe it's the Steelers first and then the Panthers. Those are just games where even with a struggling Bucs team, it's like, okay, those should both be wins for the Bucs. And then you go to Pittsburgh and you just can't get off the field with Mitchell Trubisky after after Kenny Pickett got hurt, and you had all these third and longs. Like, that is the definition of rearing its ugly head in that type of situation. And then just allowing all of those points to the Panthers after they traded Christian McCaffrey, and they still ran the ball on you. And all they had was DJ Moore at wide receiver, and he still scores the touchdown. And sure, you know, injuries played a factor. Zion McCollum had to play a lot.
Right.
But when they were at their worst, they did it against subpar teams where, you know, if you let up 30 points to Kansas City, it's like, okay, that makes sense. They got Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and everybody like that. But when they struggled, and like to go back to the sacks, 45, ninth in the league, pretty good. But it still felt like the Bucs should have had 55, you know, to a point. And it was even tough just to get to 45 because he had the blitz and send this and send that. It wasn't an easy 45. They definitely had to grind it out to get to that number.
Yeah, and so the Buccaneers, in each of the last 2 years, last year they were tied for seventh, and in the previous year, in 2021, they ranked seventh all by themselves with 47 sacks. So 45 sacks is what the Todd Bowles unit had last year, and I think there's the potential for more. Got to remember, Vita Vea led the team with 6.5 sacks.
I know.
And then you had Devin White with 4.5. I'm sorry, 5.5. Anthony Nelson with 5.5. But they got to get more from Joe Tryon, Shoyinka. And then, of course, it Todd Bowles, right? He's got to see if Shaq Barrett can play. And if not, then he's got to get either, Anthony Nelson or Yaya Diaby ready to play. And so to me, that and also blitzing, right? We've seen Antoine Winfield blitz out of the safety position, and he was playing a lot of the slot last year. So he's still going to be a factor, even though he's not playing in the slot. He will be come down in the box to play. But Ryan Neal's also a guy that can sack the quarterback and get to the passer as well. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I think that you look last year, Akeem Hicks had one sack. Will Golston had no sacks.
Yeah.
And getting more defensive sacks, whether it's Logan Hall, who wound up with 2.5 during his rookie season, or Kalijah Kansi, maybe he gets 3 or 4. It's going to be a collective effort. It always is with Todd Bowles, outside of that 1 year where Shaq Barrett had 19.5 sacks. It's usually a collective effort, and sometimes you get a double digit guy, or sometimes two, or close to it. Devin White had 9 sacks during the 2020 season.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what the total sack number will be. I felt like this year's, really the last couple of years teams, the potential was there to get 50 plus sacks. Right. And I think the Eagles getting 70. I mean, that's a one-off. I mean, that's not the norm. If Philly can get 70 sacks again, then I'll shut my mouth. But 50 plus sacks, that's a really good number. And that number, despite Todd Bowles' penchant for blitzing and the talent they've had on the team, it's not a number they've hit yet. So we'll see if they can reach 50 this year. They want to get quicker, more athletic up front. And they have, with Kalijah Kansi and now the second year of Logan Hall. And we'll see if that happens, Matt.
Yeah, it's all about the development of these players. I think, potential is one thing, but can they reach that ceiling, I think, is really the huge question. Whether it's Kansi, and, we'll see him in red and pewter for the first time. We saw him at Bucs rookie minicamp, but now working with some of the other guys, same with Logan Hall. We spent a lot of time on the defensive tackles and edge rushers. I know we talked about linebackers earlier, but we spent a lot on Devin White, and I think getting back to the good Devin, if Todd Bowles is dialing up blitzes for Devin White, that's one of the best features of his game. So I think the Bucs could really stick to that. But for Levante, I don't know. I'm usually very optimistic about just the Bucs in general. So I'm trying to not get too overconfident with this team. I do worry with Levante, when's the year where he's really going to be showing his age? When's that drop off coming? I don't think it's going to be this year, but that's always in the back of my mind. But what's your outlook, Scott, for the inside linebackers this year? I know Savarese Dennis, there's a lot of excitement. Could we see some packages where the Bucs use 3 inside linebackers and end up blitzing one of them?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I would not be surprised, and this is not any insight I've gleaned from the team. This is just me guessing, and this is what I'd do if I was Todd Bowles. Hypothesizing, I like that. I would start working in Servassier Dennis. If Devin White shows up and he's committed to play and he's going to have a great year for his contract year, either for the Buccaneers or for some other team that wants to pay him the money, in 2024? Great. Okay, so Devin's in there as the starting middle linebacker, expecting a big year out of Devin. For Lavonte David, this is probably the year I'm trying to keep him fresh and maybe more impactful by playing him a little bit less than he usually does, rotating in Servassier Dennis for a series or two, because Servassier Dennis could be the guy that ends up being the eventual replacement. And so why not get him some meaningful snaps and meaningful games and resting Lavonte a little bit? And I think that given Servassier's ability to get after the quarterback and blitz, he certainly showed that at Pittsburgh with 7 sacks last year and 15 in his career. That's an awful lot for a linebacker in college, an inside linebacker. And then also dropping in coverage. I think that's kind of the sneaky skill that he has that he really wasn't deployed at. But Matt, right off the bat in that rookie minicamp, he picked off a pass, took it to the house. And he does show the ability with good hands. Adam Slavon from Pewter Report grabbed some video of him snaring a one-handed pass in the interception drills they were running. So this guy has the ball skills to do it. So why not work him in a little bit, get him some isolated blitzes that you would typically do for Lavonte David, and practice dropping him in coverage. That way you speed up his learning curve. And then if something were to happen to Devin or Lavonte during the season, Matt, now you've got a guy that, you know, he's no stranger to the NFL football. Maybe in the first, you know, week or two, he's played in 2 or 3 series in each game, and he's not quite as green as he would be otherwise. And the more experience he can get, the better suited he's going to be to step in as a starter, either for Devin White or Lavonte David in 2024.
Yeah, Scott, I think that's a great idea, because the Bucs are so reliant on their two inside linebackers playing 100% of the time. Like, I still remember when KJ Britt came in on a goal line snap, just because it was so rare that a linebacker was on the field that wasn't named Lavonte David or Devin White. I was like, wait, what? Someone else can play linebacker for the Bucs? I think that's absolutely what Tampa Bay should try to implement. There's no shame in like giving Lavonte David a break. I mean, I know we all view him as like Superman, but yeah, if he wants to take a series off just to keep him fresh for hopefully a postseason run, or at least just, you know, crucial games down the stretch, why not give Servassier Dennis experience in a limited capacity in the right setting? Maybe you're up 10 points and the team has it on the 20. They got to go 80 yards down the field. Put him in there. Don't put him in, you know, when it's the red zone type of situation. And then if something happens to Lavonte or something happens to Devin, which odds are probably something will, because it's the NFL and players get hurt all the time. And the fact that they were so healthy last year at inside linebacker is absolutely crazy, but it got completely leveled out with, you know, Shaq getting injured and all the injuries at outside linebacker, and Carl Nassib, and the secondary for years now. It seems like once a season, there's like, oh, Buck signed this guy off the street, he's starting on Sunday. Yeah. You know, that's been the case there. So, yeah, I love the idea of letting Servassier Dennis come in. We'll probably get a lot of snaps this week at
I would imagine
OTAs
so.
Over the past couple weeks.
Devin's not going to be there, sure.
Yeah, getting him more comfortable where he's just not ice cold coming off the bench if he has to come into an important situation.
Yeah.
And let, Matt, let him get the reps.
I agree. Since we're talking linebackers, we probably should note that Todd Bowles will have his defensive tackles play linebacker sometimes.
Yes.
We saw Vita Vea come from the linebacker level on a blitz last year, and we've also seen Vita Vea drop into coverage, although I don't want him picking off passes. I don't – well, he's got some running back skills. I just don't know how fast he is to get to the end zone. But, you know, you take a guy like Kalijah Kancey, him, if you drop him in a zone blitz, right, to kind of cover that shallow middle where the crossers come, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing the ball in Kalijah Kancey's hands. He might be one of those guys with the speed to take it to the house.
I think the best interception for Vita would be a tipped ball at the line of scrimmage, and he like kind of just ends up with it. But he does have good hands. He scored a touchdown on offense for the Bucs.
That's true.
That's true. He could work with something there.
Yeah. Well, and looking again at these statistics here and where the Bucs ranked last year, you know, we talked about the rush and the pass defense and, you know, the interceptions. It's really interesting to note that Lavonte David, who's usually good for an interception or two during the season, didn't have any last year. Devin White didn't have any. So really, this interception number here, which was 10, ranked tied for 24th in the league, and is down from 17. The Buccaneers had 17 interceptions in 2021. And this was probably the biggest shocking statistic drop off, in my opinion, because they were tied for eighth in the league in 2021 with 17 picks. And that number was just about cut in half to 10 last year. And if you remember, Matt, this team had one interception against the Dallas Cowboys. That was Antoine Winfield Jr. kicking things off on opening night, on Sunday Night Football. And we thought, well, he's in for a big year as a slot cornerback. That's the only interception he had all year. And then week two, you had two interceptions courtesy of Jamel Dean. And there he is right there. And then you had a pick six by Mike Edwards in that game, yep. Right? So they had four interceptions right off the bat. And then they come home, face the Packers the next week. And in that game, Logan Ryan had an interception off of Aaron Rodgers. That's five interceptions now, right? Five interceptions. Then the next week, Sean Murphy Bunting had an interception off of Patrick Mahomes, kind of in garbage time.
Yeah.
That's six interceptions in the first four games of the season, Matt. And this team would only get four more interceptions the rest of the way. That is staggering and stunning because we thought this team was going to be off to the races with like gangbusters with a bunch of interceptions this year, and it just didn't happen.
It was going that way for sure. It was a tremendous crash and burn with the secondary, just the lack of interceptions. And yeah, to your point, some of them that they got were just garbage time. Sean Murphy Bunting, Mike Edwards against Cleveland was a halftime Hail Mary throw. So not too many meaningful interceptions as well. And I think that's what Tampa Bay missed the most. Like, sure, lack of interceptions, but just the timely interceptions, the key plays, like, oh, you need the ball back. You need a turnover here. Or, you know, the team gets into the red zone. That's going to happen. It's the NFL. And you get that red zone turnover that was like the Bucs defense has come up in the clutch in the Brady era since 2020. They didn't have too many clutch moments last year. I think one of the first ones that stands out to me, and they lost this game, but Thursday Night Football, if Bucs fans remember, they played great in that first half. And remember,
they're up 10-3. Yeah,
they came out, started out on defense, got the stop, but then there was the botched punt. So the Ravens had it at like the 5-yard line, and the Bucs defense toughened up, held them to a field goal. Now, the second half was a completely different story. But we're going to see some changes this year in the secondary. And again, everyone has to do their part. Like the linebackers, that's the big thing that scares me with Levante is the past couple of years, just the lack of turnovers in general. But how many times have Levante over the past two seasons come so close and then he claps his hands there? Like, I should have had it. He's done that way too many times.
And he's a guy that has had a lot of interceptions in his career, right? I mean, not as many as Derek Brooks, but he's certainly been one of those players. He's got a pair of pick sixes in his career. He should be a guy that has more interceptions, at least two per season. That I think he's capable of that, you know. And again, to keep things fair and balanced, I'm going to bring up Tony's comment here, Tony Saylor. We appreciate, you know, all of the comments from Tony, his regular participation. He says all the third and longs, wide open receivers and zone defense getting shredded by quarterbacks who look bad against better coach teams. A player would look good against us the next week and then would be bad. And yeah, there were some of those moments too. The statistics are what they are. I think by and large, the defense certainly was the better unit last year over the offense. And I thought it played well enough to win most of the games that it was in. You mentioned that dreadful second half against the Ravens. There was the dreadful second half against the Panthers in Carolina.
Yep.
The Browns game, allowing them to come back, tie the game, win it in overtime. The Pittsburgh game and all those third and longs that Tony's kind of mentioning there. There were some of those breakdowns that the Cowboys playoff loss was to be blamed on both sides of the ball. The defense didn't show up. The offense didn't show up. They have to play better and more consistent football. There's no doubt about that. But I think by and large, there's a lot of good things to build on for this Buccaneer defense from a year ago. And adding some new pieces, you hope that there won't be as many third and longs converted. There won't be as many wide open receivers in zone defense that they won't have the young quarterbacks and the bad quarterbacks, the guys like the Kenny Picketts and the PJ Walkers or the Brock Purdy's, shine against It's one thing for Aaron Rodgers to beat you. It's another thing for Patrick Mahomes to beat you. But for some of those other lesser quarterbacks, and they've got a slew of lesser quarterbacks, I'm using air quotes, and I'm writing that in pencil rather than pen, on the schedule this year, Matt, there's a chance they could play all four first-round quarterbacks. They're going to play Bryce Young twice. They could very well play Anthony Richardson when they play the Colts. They very well could play Will Levis when they play the Titans. And I think C.J. Stroud's on deck to be a starter in Houston.
For the Texans.
Yeah. So,
and
I mean,
even like Justin Fields week two against the Bears, he's still a young quarterback. So a lot of potential. Will they take advantage of playing against rookie quarterbacks, or will they make those rookies look like future stars, future Pro Bowl type of players? And yeah, so that's why I think the big adjustments in the secondary, I think, is super important too. Antoine Winfield Jr. just playing at free safety now. I think that will help with the interceptions overall. I would say my two and Ryan Neal. I'm very excited to see what he can do, because I think he's gonna give a little bit of everything. I think he's gonna be that Jordan Whitehead type of hammer that they could use in the box, but he could also cover as well. My two biggest questions for the Bucs defense in general, just the development of some of the guys along the defensive line, like Kalijah Kancey, if he lives up to expectations, then I'm not worried about the defensive line, at least not as much as I was. And the other side of it, who's going to play the nickel corner? Is it going to be Zion McCollum? Is it going to be Dee Delaney? Those are some in-house names the Bucs have talked about. I like Dee Delaney. You know, he's been on the podcast before. I don't know if I like him as the starting nickel corner. There's obviously Josh Hayes out of Kansas State as well. So I think that's a huge question mark for the Bucs. I mean, Jason Light said it himself. We view nickel corner as another starting position. Right. So it's crucial that they nail down this role. I don't really say that anyone's the leader in the clubhouse at the moment, but
it's going to be decided in training camp in the preseason,
Long way to go with that, but super important that they figure it out.
Right. As Darius says, are you guys worried about the depth at safety? I think they have enough bodies, right? Antoine Winfield and you've got Ryan Neal. Well, those are going to be the starters.
I'll say I am. Yeah. I don't think Nolan Turner's the bee's knees because he was an undrafted free agent that made the practice squad. Like, he's there, but he played one defensive snap and was okay on special teams. I'm not like, I feel pretty good. If Antoine Winfield Jr. goes down, Nolan Turner is going to clean it up. Yeah. I definitely am concerned, but as Flash Gordon says, there's a Christian Izian and Merriweather from Izian's from Rutgers, Merriweather from Iowa. I am excited about those two players, which I guess contradicts what I said about Nolan Turner. But at the same time, those guys do excite me.
If Winfield goes down, or if Logan Neal goes down, then it's a situation where you're looking at a young rookie stepping in, right? Yeah. Whether it's Josh Hayes, whether it's Merriweather, whether it's Izian. And then you're going to have a gaffe or two. It's just going to happen with lack of experience. And, what we'll see. I wrote about it in today's Bucs Monday mailbag. Will Golston is still out there. Akeem Hicks is still out there. And Logan Ryan is still out there. Those are three veterans that could help this team either in the trenches or in the secondary. Remember, in Tennessee, Carl Nassib showed up, right? That's where he was signed late into the preseason. So those players are still out there. I don't see any other teams clamoring for Logan Ryan, for Will Golston or Akeem Hicks. Any of those players could be re-signed to kind of bolster the defense later in training camp or the preseason if injuries show up, or if some of these guys, the newer players, the rookies, just aren't ready yet. And I think that's something that the Jason Light has got, those players on speed dial, and we'll see what happens. We'll see if any of those players get signed. And even Carl Nassib, if there's some injuries, if Shaq Barrett, is not ready to play, whatever the situation is, they've got some veteran options that know this defense that can step in and maybe bolster this roster on the defensive side.
Yeah, Scott, I'll level with you. Out of those three veteran players, I would like Logan Ryan to be back, play that nickel role for the Bucs. But the other two, don't get me wrong, love Will Golston, all-time Buck, great with the media, great with the fans and everything like that. He should be welcomed back at any Bucs game he wants to go to. I don't think the Bucs need Will Golston anymore, and I don't think they need Akeem Hicks. Like, at some point, you got to let the young guys play.
I agree.
Seeing it on offense, like, Leonard Fournette's not there. Don't bring in another veteran. Just let Rashad White be the guy.
Yeah.
I think if you bring back Will Golston or Akeem Hicks, it kind of like what we talked about with Joe Tryon-Shanka and JPP a couple years ago when JPP was playing injured. You're just stunting the growth of all the other guys there. what happens to Logan Hall's playing time if Will Golson comes in? Are they just all of a sudden going to reverse roles and and Logan Hall's getting all the playing time?
I would not be hesitant to bring back Golston or Hicks in one situation, goal line and short yardage. If you use that player, you know, 10, 12 snaps a game in those situations, because I don't know that Kalijah Kancey at 284 pounds is ready to you know, get down there against 12, 13 personnel, extra tight ends in and playing smash mouth in the trenches for 1 yard. That's what concerns me a little bit right now. This Bucs defensive line only has two players above 300 pounds that are guaranteed to make this team. That's Vita Vea at 350 and Greg Gaines at around 320 or so. So those are the only two players. Otherwise, everybody else is under 300 pounds. Deidre Sanott, if he makes the team, all right, he's 305. He's a short, squatty dude. Maybe he's that guy that helps inside. But again, if Vita Vea or Greg Gaines gets injured, all of a sudden you don't have a lot of beef up front. So I would not be surprised if you look at the depth chart, right? You have Vita Vea, Logan Hall, you've got Kalijah Kancey, you've got Patrick O'Connor and Greg Gaines. Those are the five guys guaranteed out of the six to make the roster. Pat O'Connor, about 275 pounds. He's that special teams ace. You need him on teams. And he's a situational pass rusher too, but that's five. Then you have Mike Green, Wellington Prevalon.
I think it's his birthday the other day.
So that's right. It was his birthday. Yeah. And then you've got Deidre Sanott. Those three guys vying for one more final spot, that number six guy on the depth chart. So, again, I'm fine with letting those guys get the bulk of training camp reps and see who emerges. But if this team is not quite comfortable, maybe you call up Will Golston or Akeem Hicks, put them in the mix for that final six spot, and then use them sparingly in those run stuffing type situations, short yardage and goal line.
Yeah, I think if they come in with the understanding of this is your role, this isn't what it was the past couple of seasons, then I'm fine with it. Obviously, Will's a team guy, been here for a very long time, and contractually, it wouldn't hurt the Bucs in a financial situation.
Yeah.
Brandon Riley, as we close out this show, says, I wanted to thank you guys for introducing me to Celsius. My wife and I have some every day, and they're delicious. That's awesome, Brandon. Yeah, please let us know what your favorite flavor is. But it's crazy how many different flavors that Celsius has. It is truly incredible. Like every single day, there's a new flavor. And like I almost struggle with keeping up with every single flavor that they have. But as we said, you can go to your local Walmart, Target, convenience store, Bodega. And pick up a Celsius there. But if you want to have Celsius in bulk, if you like the one, you want more of it, go to Amazon and click on the subscribe and save. I'd recommend getting the variety pack because there's so many great flavors of Celsius. Why have one flavor when you can have many? So get the variety pack, Variety's the Spice of Life, over on Amazon, the subscribe and save. You can set it up however you want when they send it to your house or apartment. You can do it weekly, monthly, quarterly, or even yearly if you want to go and do that. Just make sure you're drinking Celsius Energy Drinks, the official sponsor of the Peter Report podcast.
Yeah. Kancey in the cultivation of the Canalis culture. It says, Scott, will you consider telling the Shiano story on the pod, man? Yeah, I will tomorrow. How about that? I'll talk about the Shiano story tomorrow on the pod.
That's a great teaser. A great teaser. So you want to make sure that you tune in to tomorrow's show at 4 p.m. Going to be a very exciting day. Bucs OTAs. We're going to get to watch practice. I'm sure we'll get to talk to some players as well. We'll have some video of Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask slinging the rock. Yep. While we're out there, we'll get Scott Reynolds, Greg Schiano story, and a lot more great stuff this week. We have Wednesday's show. We're going to talk about the most intriguing second-year player for the Bucs. You heard us talk about Logan Hall. And then, of course, Thursday, to wrap everything up after the week, we're going to have Cody Mauch on the show. Their rookie offensive lineman going to be playing right guard. They drafted him in the second round. Very entertaining guy already. Got to speak to him a couple of times. And, of course, you can find all of this on our YouTube channel. Please follow us on our social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Peter Report. And of course, on YouTube, we are Peter Report TV. And make sure you read all of our stuff at PeterReport.com. But that's going to do it for us on today's show. Thank you to all the Peter people that were in the chats today and participating during roll call.
And the super chats. Thank you very much.
Yes, and the super chats. Adam Hamilton, Bucs Basement. Thank you so much to you guys. For Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thank you, everybody, for watching. And we will see you tomorrow for another edition of the Peter Report podcast. Out.
out. Bucks football tomorrow, OTAs.